Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Hi, and welcome to my podcast, I Shouldn't Say This, But. My name is Katie Leeson, and I'm Managing Director of Social Chain UK. This week, I am joined by the fantastic Johan Pavi, VP of Marketing at Laced, the startup sneaker reselling platform that's taking Europe by storm. Johan has had an incredible career working with some of the world's best-known brands, including Depop and Deliveroo, both of which he started when they were at very early stages. In this episode, we discussed how he went from an engineering career into marketing, the importance of social listening and how consumer insight drives a brand or business forward. We also chatted about the importance of paid and organic and the blend of that on social right now, what it's like starting a new job during the pandemic, and personal branding and LinkedIn tips to help develop your career. He says that he wouldn't be in the places that he is now without building a personal brand to develop his own progression. The conversation is really interesting. I could have talked to him for hours. He's got such an in-depth knowledge about social. So if you're interested in how to use social media to help your own personal career, but also to build a brand, this episode's for you. So without further ado, sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode of I Shouldn't Say This, But. Good morning, Johan. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm very excited to talk to you because you have had such an interesting career. So yeah, welcome to the podcast.
Good morning, Katie. Thank you for the invite.
I'm going to jump straight in with the questions because I just want to get to the nitty gritty. Tell me about your career. I want to know how you've got to where you are now.
So I'm French. I come from south of France and I studied engineering, computer science, and jumped into engineering in the beginning of my career. So I actually never worked in France. I went to the UK straight away, worked in Cardiff for the first year and a half, almost 2 years, in my early 20s as an engineer for an aerospace company. Did that for almost 2 years and moved to London to work for Ford. So moved into automotive engineering. Then after like a total of like 4 or 5 years, I had like a lot of discussion with myself over those years, like thinking, like, is that what I'm going to do for the rest of my life? And the answer was no. So I was thinking, what I'm going to do next? Like, what do I like to do? And I saw a post from someone who actually was working at Facebook, but moved into an agency, one of those like early Facebook agencies in the early days of Facebook ads. Obviously, it was mostly for young people who wanted to start working. And I already had like a few years in a bag for me. So I was slightly older than the rest. So I applied, I contacted him, and we met a few times. So what I did basically is for the space of, I think, 2 months, every evening after work, I was literally teaching myself marketing, more specifically like digital marketing. So how does it work and why do people do it? And what I could find online about it as well, because I don't think there was any like Facebook business website. I managed to get the job and I jumped straight into one of those fast agency, taking a lot of clients to run their Facebook campaigns. And I quickly had a few clients, and some of them were spending quite a lot of money on a monthly basis. So it was like a kind of a revelation for me that that existed. And I grew a passion for it very quickly. After like a couple of weeks, I was like hooked in. I was like, this is great. I could use, obviously, some of my background looking into the data, and I was really curious about it. And it started from there, basically. So that was like my entry to this world. So that was like 6 years ago.
Just on that, like, you switched careers quite dramatically from what you knew to something completely different. What would be your tips to anyone that's listening, that's thinking, especially in this year, like this year is such a year where you've got time to reflect and you might not be enjoying the role that you're doing. What tips would you give to people if they're feeling unhappy in their chosen career, but they feel like it's a little bit late to change?
Do your research on, is it something you want to do? Like, whatever you want to change into, read about it and really like try and like immerse yourself into that world and see how you fit in, even though you probably don't have any experience in it. I think it's still true today, because I still do it today. You can really learn a lot just by yourself, especially in the marketing space. A lot of it is very new, and still I think a lot of companies are still catching up to all the possibilities and what's going on in the like intricacies of the channel. So if you take Google, if you take Facebook, if you take, I don't know, the newer ones like Snapchat or TikTok, etc. I don't think it's an edge thing. Like, you can be slightly older and still learn about these things and add value to a company that's looking to recruit someone who has a passion for it. I think it's not necessarily about a diploma at this stage, because a lot of these skills are very new and you don't really learn them in school. So I think that would be my tip. Just do the work by yourself. Nothing will stop you to do that. So it's all there available.
And don't be scared, I guess, that you will be underqualified, because you can learn on the job.
Yeah, and the thing is, the way I did it going into an interview is like, I would be fully transparent in saying, I know I've never done it before, but this is what I know. And the way you would talk about it would be the way you convince someone to be like, this is the person we want to have. That's the way I did it.
No, they're really good tips. And very pertinent now, as I say, because I think everyone's kind of having to think about what this year's brought and what they want to be doing and where they want to focus their time. So I think that'll be very useful to a lot of people listening. So yeah, you were at that agency, and then what happened?
And then we tried to pitch this up-and-coming company called Deliveroo, which I didn't know about at the time, because it was still early stage, and basically joined them internally. Because what happened is, through LinkedIn, so LinkedIn was already like quite successful for me even then. I got a message the next day after the meeting we had between the agency and Deliveroo from one of the early marketing person at Deliveroo, saying, we're building our growth team or paid marketing team, so it would be great to have you, like, or would you be interested? And I went into that process after being in the agency, and I quickly realized that I would prefer being in-house, and I stick to it ever since, because I do find myself a lot more passionate while I'm in-house, and I can really see the benefit of moving the needle of a business myself internally, rather than having multiple, clients that you feel like you're doing the job, but you're not really getting the reward sometimes. So. Mm-hmm. Or you don't really have the full freedom of giving the ideas and making decisions. I moved at Deliveroo after the agency. It was the first marketing team. I was really lucky to be part of that. The company grew like crazy during my time. I think we opened like 6 or 7 countries in my first quarter, then the first 3 months, and obviously the paid marketing aspect of it was very important in that growth. It was kind of throwing myself in the deep end and just like trusting that I can do it, and having the trust of my peers and my manager at the time, etc., because everything was like I said, like very early stage in scaling Facebook ads, mainly Facebook ads at the time, to that scale. It was a really great way to be exposed to it, I guess.
What was it like being in there at that sort of incubation period where it was just about to explode?
It was really exciting. We really went from a bit less than 100 employees to hundreds in like 6 months or 2 years, you know, and all over the world as well. So suddenly I had colleagues to talk to in like Australia and like Hong Kong, and we had to like organize ourselves as, you know, cities were expanding and we were opening everywhere. So yeah, it was a learning from like at every level, not just from the job itself, but also from like organizational skills and setting up, I don't know, meetings across like 6 different countries and different languages and people that not necessarily met each other. So a bit like COVID these days, where you like, you don't really see your colleagues at all. It was a bit like that because people were just being recruited from other countries and we had to like work with them very quickly without necessarily be there with them. So
did they have any processes for that? What did they do to encourage a culture, a shared culture, when you've got so many different people in loads of different places and it's growing so quickly?
I think there wasn't like a strict process from what I remember. I might be slightly wrong there, but I think every country had a slightly different feel to it. Spanish team was very different from the team in Belgium, for example. But just from like, it was fun. It was fun because we were talking about food a lot. So it was like, from a food point of view, like food was very different. So it was like different flavors, basically, to the different teams. But I don't think there was a particular list of rules that we were like following, besides, you know, the job they were recruited for, basically.
Now you've got people who won't ever, they might not meet each other in real life when they start the new role. It's all going to be over video. So it's difficult to build that connection with people when you're so separate. And it's an important skill that we're trying to build at the moment, is like how to keep the culture special.
We made sure that we had like regular catch-ups and not necessarily talking about work. So already at the time, we were having like more personal calls, if you will, but in groups and just like chatting about getting to know each other, basically. Obviously, every now and then we would meet in the office, which, because we could, we would fly to different countries to meet them, so that helped. But in between, we made sure that we had enough catch-ups during the week to not just talk about, you know, targets and results and things that can be stressful sometimes, you know.
I think that's incredibly important, because you could quite easily just do your job, but working at somewhere, I guess, like delivery, when it's starting out on its journey, it's incredibly exciting to be having that social aspect of knowing your team is incredibly important. So how long were you there for?
2 years, about 2 years, a bit less, like just about 2 years. In that 2 years, obviously the company changed a lot, and that's kind of I realized when I talk about my past few years, like years of my career, like there's a common thread every time. But basically, the company grew to a bigger organization, and I didn't feel like I was fitting in that new settings anymore. So I started to look a little bit for something where I could learn more broadly about marketing. My niche was really paid social, if you will, as a channel, and I grew within that. So as a new social platform came in, and we're doing more and more, is testing more and more on new channels, but really paid social. And I went for a broader, I tried to, you know, continue growing in my career. So I went for a more broader role in performance marketing, like looking at more channels than just paid social. And also was interested in learning into what B2B marketing would be. Because I think there's another world there, which is kind of different from B2C. There's a lot of, obviously, parallels, but I was really interested in the way marketing and sales teams can work together and really optimize themselves to generate the most, you know, revenue for a business, for a B2B business. So I went to this company called Perkbox, which is very UK-centric in this case, which is a perks and benefits companies for employees. So your business sign up and you get loads of cool stuff with it. And that was really interesting. So I had a bigger role. I could build a wider team within marketing, which I thought was really very interesting, and also like new skill set within the B2B world of marketing. I leaned into LinkedIn quite a lot during that period, which was interesting because that's when LinkedIn got bought by Microsoft as well. So there was a lot of changes on the platform. So I also learned that channel from an organic point of view, but also paid point of view. And that kind of that gave me that extra layer of knowledge. So I really liked that period. It wasn't as long as Deliveroo. I think I stayed there for a year and a half. Went back to B2C after that, but it was good. It was a good new set of things to learn in B2B for sure. And then I got contacted by Depop straight away. Was really interested in because as a on my personal side, I've always been into clothes and secondhand and sneakers actually as well growing up. So got really interested in that and joined Depop in a similar kind of a similar phase that Deliveroo was at the time, pre-Series C, no digital team, and wanted to expand on that front. So. But I at Depop, I joined with a much wider role, which was head of digital marketing, and that's where I was up until recently in 2020. So that was great.
Yeah, and you left there just as the pandemic was kicking off, didn't you?
Yeah, at the beginning of the pandemic. But if I summarize it, it was a very similar scenario. Lots of growth, build a team. We had like a very exciting time during those almost 2 years. And the company morphed into something new, something bigger. We're post Series C and doing a transformation internally in a way, you know, teams are being set up, etc. And I again was like, I need something that is maybe a little bit smaller where I can get more things done quicker and have impact. And that's where I joined Laced, so which I've been for the past five months now.
Do you want to tell me why did you choose Laced? What was it about it?
It was a couple of things. So first of all, it's about sneakers and trainers, which I'm passionate about. I've been known at work for always wearing the latest or like some crazy trainers. So that really attracted me. Like I said, like I've been in trainers since I'm like 12 because I played basketball all my youth and I'm really into like American culture, etc. So that's really me. So I felt like it was like the culmination of where I was going in my career and what I like in personal and my personal life and like coming together in one. So that was great. And the other thing was the challenge of the company. So it's a brand new company, really. It's been around for on paper like a year and a bit, but really has been scaled since the beginning of this year. And it's a very small team. So I'm basically starting with the founder. And we're figuring things out during COVID and like growing the business, building the team, starting doing some recruitment, which is really exciting. And it's a place where I've never been. I never joined a company that early. So yeah, it's full of new challenges while doing also what I love, which is marketing. So yeah.
What's your job title? And then knowing what I know about working for a startup, what does your role actually entail? Because you end up not just doing what your job title is, you end up doing a bit of everything, don't you?
So I'm VP of marketing, but really what my job is everything, really. Like I do a bit of 15 jobs in one, a bit less now because I managed to recruit a couple of people to take some of that work. But on the marketing side, obviously, is thinking about the beginning of building the brand, thinking about growth from a paid and organic point of view, thinking about, you know, also financially, what can we do from like recruitment point of view versus freelance, and how can we, you you know, squeeze as much as possible out of what we have. I do a lot of, you know, managing the website and things like that, which I didn't necessarily do in my past, in my past career. So like, I'm adding those new skill set as the company grows, which is great. I will eventually pass on to the team when we are at the right phase. But yeah, no, I find it very exciting, because I think also in these times where we working from home, etc., it's great to do new things. In a way, it's kind of liberating in a way to learn new things, even if they are within the realm of marketing.
What is your favorite part about this new role, and what's your least favorite part?
I think my favorite part, obviously, is to talk about shoes every day and every day. That's like, I think that's to basically do meetings and talk about Jordans and Yeezys and, you know, what's coming out next week, etc. I think I find it like, it's just, it doesn't feel like work sometimes. I'm just very curious about it. So it's amazing. The least favorite part, which is kind of linked to that, but I never realized how complicated sizing was between the different brands of shoes.
Wow. I didn't know that. I didn't know there was differences between the different brands. And so actually, no, that makes a lot of sense. You've had quite a varied career in terms of the brands that you work for. I'm going to ask you to name your favourite.
Outside of my current one, I would say Depop, because it's the closest to... It's within a similar like universe, like clothes. And we also have second-hand shoes on there. So that's kind of... It goes end to end almost. It was great to like be close to the community on there, and do some interesting work with, you know, young creatives, and I think that was amazing.
All the brands have had such an amazing journey, so it's going to be really interesting to watch Laced, and we'll get a little bit into it in a second. But I'm going to ask you a couple of quick fire questions just so the listeners at home can get to know you a little bit more. So if you had 25 hours a day, how would you use that extra time?
I have two kids, two young children, so sleeping is the thing I miss the most. An extra hour is definitely for sleeping.
If you were going to be a wrestler or a boxer, what would your entrance theme song be?
I'm going to go a little bit old school, but not too old school. I would say there's a song by Drake called Trophies, which I really like. I think it's from like 2014. It's the perfect song for me.
What would you like to be known for or remembered for?
I think I would like to be remembered for like supporting people around me. So like be a good support for like my family. Obviously my kids, my family around, and friends, and the people I work with, you know. I think being empowering people, make sure that, you know, they get to give their best, you know.
Which leads me actually really nicely onto the next question. What is it that you think makes a good leader?
Like being able to listen to your team and make sure they feel empowered to you know, to grow in their career, and it could be also on a personal level. So like if they feel like they can be talking to you and feel comfortable in that, I think that's a good thing.
Now I want to dive into Laced, because I'm excited to talk to you about this. It's such a cool emerging space. I want to know about the story of the brand and the history of the company.
The company was founded by Chris, who's coming from the space. So he's been in the sneakers world since his like late teens. So it's been quite a few years, and built a couple of businesses before. So very entrepreneur type of person, and his recent one was Laced, which is a marketplace for reselling sneakers, so reselling mostly, exclusively new and desktop sneakers, so not worn. The goal really for him and now for us is to tackle the European market, which is a huge market. Reselling in general is growing faster than you know, fashion in general. That's a segment that's really growing like super fast. I think the projection by 2025 is around like six billion, I think, in Europe, but for sneakers only. So there's a huge market there, and it's very recent. The other players are not necessarily from Europe, so coming from the US. So there's a lot to do there, and it's very recent in a way that didn't exist 5 years ago. It's still very new, even though some players are still already big. There is some space in Europe and Asia to grow in that segment.
I want to know a little bit more about the space, because it's such a new area, but you say it's got massive growth potential and it's actually bigger than buying from retail. What is it? What's that consumer behavior? What started triggering this behavior in purchasing sneakers?
For sneakers specifically, I think it's a new behavior in consumers that is in line with the way mostly Nike and Adidas started to launch their products. And when I talk about Adidas, is also coming, it's mainly coming from Yeezy, Yeezy side of things, which is linked to Kanye West, who's you know, one of the biggest celebrities in our current society as well, which helps. But those companies, as I don't know, you know, some people might know, some people might not, but started to release their sneakers in limited quantities, and that created kind of an entrepreneurial side of things in the Gen Z mainly, you know, being able to buy when those sneakers are released. And basically flipping those sneakers for like a higher price because the quantities are limited. So it works for the big brands because it kind of it stretches their marketing effort even further because some of these pairs are becoming very rare items that people want to collect. They become collector's item basically. And that opens up opportunities for marketplace like Laced to come in and control that supply and demand on the secondary market. I think that's where it comes from, and that's very recent because of the way Nike and Adidas and I've started to like release their drop for a few years now, and I think there is even more of a direction going to direct to consumer for Nike. You know, they're putting a lot more effort on their apps, etc. But I think that's only going to get stronger and stronger in the years to come, because we're only at the start of this. In the bigger spectrum, when you look at sneakers in general, which really started in the craze started really in the 90s with the pairs dropping in the late 80s with the first Jordans and the Jordan 1s, which now being the second hand one that have been worn in 1985 and 1986, etc., or being sold by auction house for, you know, $500,000, you know. So that's the extreme, on the extreme side of the spectrum. You get secondhand pairs which are sold for very, very high price. More recent ones, so the ones who dropped in the past few months, they are brand new, they haven't been worn, but you can imagine that those pairs in 20, 30 years, what they're going to become. You know, they might become those new, you know, collector's item. And I think the new generation is seeing sneakers almost like as a, you know, investment, you know, in a way you could invest in stock, you know. That's mainly where the biggest player in that space right now, the idea came from, you know, like to treat it as a stock.
People are buying them then not to wear them necessarily, but to keep them as box fresh as for... because they'll be worth more, I guess, if they've not been worn.
Exactly. So some people would buy two pairs, you know, like I never done it myself, but sometimes I see one to wear and one to keep on ice. That's the expression.
What is the most popular trainer on Laced at the moment? And what's the one to watch? So if we've got people wanting to do an investment, what is the piece that you would recommend?
The most popular are still, you know, the Jordan 1 silhouette. Mm-hmm. That's like the classic, and Nike keeps releasing new colorways and new ways to make it, to refresh it. And I think the one to watch would be the Nike Dunk, which was originally released in the early 2000s, and they're coming back in a different shape or form. So you have the Dunk High, the Dunk Low, which was very popular in the skateboard scene, so for skateboarders. So you have the Nike Dunk SB, which is the SB for skateboard. Those ones are being really released since the beginning of this year, really in volume. And I think those pairs in 10, 15 years will be worth a lot more than they are. And you can already see like some of the pairs that released in January, February time this year, they're already worth three times the price.
Like even in this COVID market, I'm going to start investing in trainers. This is going to be great. I love buying clothes. It's what I do. Stocks and shares, I'm not interested in. You can't.
Funnily, I got one of those pairs in the wrong size, funnily enough. I got a friend who messed up my size. So I kept them in box. I never worn them. And I think retail was £100 and they're worth 550 now. It's pretty interesting. If you think about that in volume, if you have some, when you start entering that game, it can become addictive, especially when you're into it, you're into trainers. I think once you start doing that once, twice, I can understand why when you're still in school, 17, 18, and you can get all of a few pairs and increase your portfolio every time. That's how some of resellers, kind of that becomes their main source of income, because suddenly it becomes like a genuine like salary, and you can just end up doing that.
So this year's just been crazy, and you've been launching a brand. How's COVID impacted you?
That's one of the things that obviously I checked before I joined, because it was during COVID. So I was like, well, I'm gonna move into, and is it gonna be okay in those times? And luckily for us, we're one of these businesses. Our website is really like an e-commerce website. So I think e-commerce in general has been booming, people being more online, more at home. We've seen like a crazy growth between the beginning of COVID and now. So it's been okay. It's been okay. I mean, there's other challenges like everyone has, but business wise, I think it's been, that's been the easiest part almost. Being a new platform in this space, we're giving another opportunity for sellers to be able to sell their product and in a space where there is still space for someone like Lace to grow. So I think that was a combination of those things.
Yeah, because I guess you've not got a supply chain issue, have you? Because the train is already made and you're reselling. How does it work then? So someone, like say I bought a pair of trainers, would I sell them to Laced and Laced would then sell them on?
The seller would send the product to us first, because the core of the business is authentication. In the sneakers world, there's a lot of fakes out there that you can find in other websites, sometimes on eBay, because there is they don't do this authentication in the middle. The buyer would buy the product, but the seller would send to us first. We would check the product and then send the product to the buyer as fast as possible. And that's how it works.
I've seen it actually similar. There's a page, this is a company called Celia in Knightsbridge that's absolutely blown up over COVID. Similar sort of thing, but it's all designer pieces. So it's designer shoes and bags and clothes. They do exactly the same. So they take the product, check that it's authentic, and then they resell it on. And that sustainability piece is really interesting from their point of view, because obviously it's not buying new and you're not adding on, you're buying something that's pre-loved. So I've noticed that trend through there. They're growing massively. There's a couple of bits I want to ask you. In terms of knowing what the latest or what the next big shoe is going to be, how do you do that? Do you talk to customers and do a lot of research, or do you do social listening? How do you get your knowledge?
That's a good question, because we could do more on that front. I think we're still quite small to be able to have like what I'm used to in from other companies and you know, doing surveys and asking your audience, etc. But we do what we can with what we have, which is, for example, Instagram story polls, for instance, are a good way for us to know what's going to be popular in advance or the week is going to drop, to give a steer of where we should focus on. We get thousands of replies on those stories, and that's, I mean, you know, from like 500 answers, I think it would be a relevant number to take as a survey. So when you get a few thousands, I think for me it's relevant enough to know if it's a popular product or not. We use that as a tool. Obviously, it's a nice engagement piece for audience, and it's important to do that on Instagram. So we do that very regularly. But I use that as a market research piece. The other thing is being in the scene myself helps, obviously, knowing in advance like what's going to be popular or not, and that helps us making decisions on the website as well on what to focus on. And then the other side is listening to the brands, so looking for Yeezy News and Nike, etc. We can build up a calendar fairly ahead of time to know when things are going to drop. There's tons. The thing is, it's a very passionate community. There's a lot of website already, like news website, doing that research. So you can find those information in advance as they're coming in, or like leaking from like forums and subreddits and things like that. You can know fairly in advance. I have to say, like in the recent years, in the changes I've noticed, especially from Nike, some they become really good sometimes at like not saying when a shoe is gonna drop until, you know, 2 days before, or like, you know, if they want to, they can do that. But luckily enough, the ones that are gonna be popular, you can piggyback off of their marketing campaign months in advance, because you know they're talking about it. So it's that helps for sure.
Interesting. So we've talked about social listening a bit, but how important is social media?
Sneakers are very popular. It's a very popular category on Instagram. If you look for it, it gets a lot of engagement. So one of our objective as a player coming into the scene as a new marketplace is for us to get into that community and really become as relevant as possible within that community. So we're using Instagram right now as the main social channel. We've been growing like crazy. We doubled our followers in the space of like 2 months, I think. I think we passed 40,000 since yesterday.
What do you put that down to? Like, because Instagram's quite tricky to grow, isn't it, as a new brand? What tips can you give?
We tweaked the way we use Instagram to get as much as possible from it. And I know it's hard and it takes time, but, by looking at the right hashtags to use to be able to show up on the Explore page, mixing the type of content, like I said, using stories to engage with the audience as much as possible, you know, asking questions wherever we can to get as many comments as possible. Be as engaging as you can is the advice I would give, because that's what Instagram is going to read as a metric to push your profile more than another. On other people's suggestions, mainly on the Explore page. So we went from when I joined, I think the account, and I tried myself for the first like couple of weeks. That's one of the things I was doing at the very beginning when I joined. I think we had like less than a person engagement rate, like 0.6 or something, a very, very low number. And I think in the past 30 days, we're like above 6%. So we really exploded the engagement we got from our account through the various different tactics like that to get the engagement up. But I think also the category itself, sneakers, is very popular on Instagram, so people tend to engage with it more. I think that wouldn't be that easy for every industry or every businesses, but that's definitely one of the most important channels right now for us. Yeah.
Going back to your where you started out in terms of paid, what do you think the role of paid is now within social? Because it's a question we get asked a lot. Is what should people use paid for? Should it just be to sell something, or should it to boost organic? What's your view on the relationship between paid and organic content?
That's a question that I've asked myself a lot as well. So I think within companies, the roles themselves, where I think it's changing now, but I think the roles between organic and paid were very split for a few years because it was very new. So you would have your pay team doing one thing on the side and optimizing ads just for revenues and just for like your business KPI, and then you would have your organic team doing something else, basically like engaging on a daily basis, and that wouldn't necessarily have a resonance with the ads side of things. And that would also trickle down on the budget front. So you would have your pay team, which has a big budget because they're responsible for X amount of growth for the company on a daily basis. And then you'll have your organic team, which has no budget. It's like just no budget, a little bit to do some content, and they're really fighting to do like get their some ideas out there. So I think what's changed, and I've also like myself trying to be part of that change, is make sure that those team become really one team and work together on like a very similar calendar or frequencies of what content's coming out and how does it work with the paid side of things, which maybe would be refreshed a little bit less often, obviously, because you won't change your ads every day because that wouldn't be best practice, but to make sure that it's as connected as possible. And exactly with what you said, instead in terms of budget, I now tend to allocate a little bit more to the organic team, if you call it that way, to be able to fuel the awareness side of things with a little bit more at the top of the funnel, to be able to squeeze more out of the direct response side of things with the ads.
Yeah.
So there is not like the balance, it becomes a bit more balanced between the two. Because for a lot of companies in the past 5 years, we've seen, and there's been like so many articles written about it, like that, you know, paid becomes more and more expensive. And it's just a logic thing. It's, you know, as much as you put in there, the more people you reach, the less people you have to reach, you know, like it gets thinner and thinner, unless you keep doing exciting things on the, you know, top of the funnel and awareness piece. And that comes from the organic team. So yeah, that's what I've seen.
It is. It's striking a balance, isn't it? And not being afraid to put a bit of paid behind that top of the funnel to boost that top, because it is so tricky to just get organic views unless you are constantly shaking things up in terms of your content, and that's a pressure on an organic team.
Exactly. And it's tricky because it comes from giving that knowledge across the business. I've seen a few times before, like the reason why budget is not allocated is just because people are not necessarily aware of that problem because it's so new. the paid marketing team would be kind of working in isolation with like an astronomical budget, but not knowing the wins you can have by putting a little bit of that budget into boosting some of those videos or some of that content that you've already spent money creating, which is also like the weird thing about it. There's going to be some companies, some considerable amount of money paid put on that content, but then nothing to boost it. And you're seeing some brands when you look in their videos on YouTube or wherever that may be, that would have like less than 1,000 views, like 2,000 views. And you know, they spend money on that content, yeah. Right? Yeah. But they didn't think of the distribution piece of it. And when I see, I always notice it. I'm like, oh, that's a shame, because you know, that's, no one's going to see that.
Yeah, and the amount of time and money and creative thought and all that stuff that's gone into it is wasted, isn't it? Because you can't maximize the opportunity with a great piece of content if people aren't going to see it. We could talk about that for hours, I think. Let's just talk about you and the use, because we've talked about how laced you social media. I know that you are quite prevalent on LinkedIn and you've done quite a lot of posts. You're building a personal brand. How are you working on it, and what role do you see a personal brand as? Like, how is it important to you to build a personal brand?
I find it very interesting to do that in parallel of building a career. I think LinkedIn, when I started to use LinkedIn mostly for that, was about 2 years ago. And I didn't do it as consistently as I wanted to. I still don't, because I still finding the time to like be on it and find topics to talk about. The maintenance around it, I still find it challenging, but I think it's very important. Like I've noticed it a couple of years ago. I started to build my profile as I was building my career in marketing, and trying to find a voice within that where I could have something to say that is more me, and get people to react to it, whether it's like a different opinion, opposite opinion, or the same opinion. I think it's just, it was very interesting for me to see how easy you could get the organic engagement on LinkedIn, and trying to look for that engagement. It comes and goes. It's a little bit like social media in general. Like in some phases for a month, I'll be very like on it and try to push for a bit more personal brand. But then I would step back and like kind of pause social media, including LinkedIn, including Instagram and everything, just because I don't, you know, it's like almost like I don't see the need to be on there, and I just want to like focus on other things and like, you know, the personal side, and I don't want to spend too much time on it. But I do think it's very important, and in the transition between jobs, especially when I decided to stop Depop and kind of, for example, did like a little announcement on LinkedIn, that opened up almost, I think, I can't remember the number, but like quite a few options on the table from having built that personal brand of people reaching out and be like, oh, what are you doing next? You know, let's have some discussions, etc. So that helped me. I realized literally during COVID how important it was to have the work I've done before. That was important, basically.
It's got a bit of a bad name sometimes, though, doesn't it, when you talk about personal branding? Because it sounds like you're trying to do it to boost. It's an ego boost. But you, the way you've talked about it and the benefits that you've got out of it for your career, do you think you'd be where you are now without building that personal brand?
I don't think so. I think you can, in any industry, you can. If you don't do a little bit of personal branding and get your name networking basically with people in your space, you can very easily become like a part of the mass. You don't really stand out from the rest, and I think it's about that little extra standing out from the rest of the people doing what you do, basically. That's the way I see it. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you're not going to get any response negatively from me, are you? Because it's what's helped build my brand. I'm going to wrap up the podcast because obviously this podcast is called I Shouldn't Say This, But, because each episode I open with real honesty and I talk about subjects that someone in the role of an MD would usually avoid, probably wouldn't say. So would you mind ending this podcast with an admission of something that you probably shouldn't say? Please.
I think the thing I would say is that since the lockdown and with the COVID-19, etc., like it's been really hard to work from home for me. I think some people are better at this than I do, but I think it's been like a hard transition to like not see people face to face. I get a lot of my motivation from interacting with people in real life, I think. So that was something that that was hard, and I'm still adapting to.
How have you found it being a parent, being at home, starting a new job?
I kind of made my peace that, you know, there's so much you can change to kind of make it work. It is what it is, and you have to like live with it, if that makes sense, you know, like not everything can be solved, that kind of thing, type of mindset, you know, because it's those are special times, and we haven't been prepared, you know, for what happens. So it was definitely very difficult, but at the moment a bit better because the nursery is open. But with the kids, I think it was, it's a lot of adaptations and, you know, what's expected from you when you can't necessarily have a lot of time to focus on progressing on some things and projects and managing teams, etc. So, yeah.
Do you think it's been harder starting a new job in this climate as well?
It would have been different, I think, if I had joined established company with lots of employees, bigger teams, and a lot of people to manage. I think the way it worked out for me, and I thought about it before joining as well, is joining a small startup with literally just a few people means minimum amount of meetings, maximum amount of doings. So it made it easier in a way, because I can manage my own time easily and progress as much as possible when I can, without having, you know, 5, 6, 7 different teams to have meetings with every day. And like, you know, you know, the kind of like situation you can be in a more established company where things are a little bit more complex from a communication standpoint. I think the communication part became really easy with a small company, because I'm only talking to like 2 people, you know? So it's very, it's very, very, very straightforward, actually. It became easier.
Brill. Oh, well, thank you so much. I think there's lots of value that people can get out of this episode, including tips on organic versus paid, some insider info in how to use customer insights and social listening to really drive a business forward, what it's like to start at so many startups, and starting a brand new industry as well, after training in something else. So thank you so much for your time. It's been really, really good to chat to you.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you for inviting me once again. That was great. Great chat. Thank you, Katie.